it's a cloud of information, you know,
like right.
how you upload your photos. I don't know how to explain tech stuff, but we're all like uploading our information and downloading from the yes. cloud of consciousness.
Good way to put it. Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we ask, what is the collective consciousness and why should it matter to me anyway? Bean, are you interested?
Of course I am.
Bean, we're back.
We're back at it. We're back and we are ready. More ready than ever.
I did have a little pep in my step this morning. I did kind of hop out of bed saying, I get to record with my bestie again.
100%.
It was a long summer hiatus. How was your summer?
My summer was good, minus only seeing you for like one night. But my summer was
good. It was the most glorious night.
Truly. Truly and
New York City. This is all we'll say, guys. New York City. Robes. A massive bed and
your
TJ just kind of in there with us. And it doesn't get any more interesting or rated X than that. It is literally us in robes in bed watching Netflix. What were we doing?
I don't remember, but it was a dream. It felt like a dream.
Other than that, what else?
The usual beach, a bunch, Curacao, which was really interesting and lovely. I've never been.
And gorgeous from your pictures.
And gorgeous. A lot of time with my kids. A lot of time. Two of my kids did not attend camp this summer. So it was a lot of slow mornings and easeful time, which was nice. School starts.
You mommed hard this summer.
I did. I mommed a lot.
From my POV across the country. You were momming.
I was momming all the days. Thanks for being a supportive and flexible boss.
My pleasure, Bean.
Yes.
It was good. It was a really good summer. You know what? I feel like I was really chill this summer, so I let things just happen. And so that was really fun. August is my favorite month, and it did not freaking disappoint. Both of our birthdays are in August. Happy belated.
To us.
So that was super fun. I got in the ocean, in the Pacific Ocean, for the first time in my life on my birthday. Yeah, because we had a heat wave here in Santa Barbara, and so the ocean actually felt good. That's I mean, the biggest reason I don't get in is obviously sharks.
Right.
But the second biggest reason is it's freezing. The water was so nice. I went in there with, you know, Jen, my friend Jen, with a mattress, a pool mattress, which is
that's nice,
pretty janky. And we were trying to ride the waves. And so obviously that did not end well.
Success.
But it was really fun. Yeah. We had a summer party. We had a band here.
Ooh.
There's a thing. I have to say, having a band in your backyard is a vibe.
A real vibe. You're like bougie.
Real.
Yeah.
That's how the bougie it was an do it. 80s punk band. And we all dressed 80s. We just like, we really
you looked
did
amazing.
It.
I would actually like to share those photos on our website at some point because you looked phenom.
Maybe we can post them to social. Maybe we can post on our Signal with Maury and Melissa on Instagram some of our summer pictures.
Yes.
Go check that out. Go over there and check that out. All right. Well,
all right. Get up.
Friends, thank you for coming back with us. I hope you all had a good summer and that you're ready to get into some of these spiritual yet how do we make them practical concepts with Bean and I. We have been thinking long and hard about this podcast over the summer and we decided we want to mix it up a little. Let's keep it fresh. Let's change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
So for those of you that have been with us for the last few seasons, thank you. You're going to notice some changes. For those of you that are just joining us, welcome. We really want you to be a part of this conversation like you're sitting here with your bestie chit-chatting about the things that matter in your life. But we thought, how do we make this even more engaging and interesting? So this is what we're doing. We're introducing a couple new segments in every episode. You're going to notice that we're going to do three things. For those of you that have been listening for a long time, you know we like to start by talking about our cringe or delight moments of the week. We decided, let's mix that up a little. And we are introducing a new segment that we're calling Hot or Hype.
It gives real Paris Hilton circa 2000 vibes. Hot or hype. Yeah.
And we are millennials and we're just leaning fully into it. So that's where we're going to discuss something that is popular in the pop culture, on socials, whatever, in the self-help space, since that's a lot of what we talk about. And we're going to decide, is it hot or is it hype? Then we'll get into our main topic, and then we're always going to end every episode with listener questions. So if you have a question that you want to hear the Beans give you some guidance, some advice, our perspective on, Bean, where can they email us?
You can email us at moriandmelissa@gmail.com, and we'll link that for you in the show notes.
All right. So make sure to reach out to us there. You can ask us questions. You can share your feelings about the episode, but we'd love to hear from you.
Yes. And for those of you who can't see, Maury's doing a little shimmy with her shoulders. So I think she really wants you to send us some messages.
It'll make me shimmy even harder.
Oh.
All right. Are you ready for our first hot or hype?
I'm already. My air conditioner is broken, so I am already hot. So I don't know. I think I'm ready. I'm hot and hyped.
Okay, this week for Hot or Hype, we're going to get into something I've been thinking about all summer. This isn't new today for any of you listening in September, but it is something that was a big trend over the summer, which is Mel Robbins' book, Let Them, and the Let Them Theory. I don't know how many of you have read it. I have skimmed it. I have looked into it. I've listened to a couple podcasts about it. I've listened to her talk about it. So, Bean, I'm going to give you kind of like a 3-minute overview, and then you're going to tell me hot or hype. Okay.
Hit me with it.
Mel Robbins, are you familiar with her?
Familiar. I haven't listened to nearly as much as you have, but I follow her, you know, the regular.
Okay, great.
Great.
She has some great content.
Great.
She is best known as a obviously motivational self-help author. She has one of the top podcasts in the world, the Mel Robbins podcast, where millions are learning kind of through her down-to-earth memoir-like storytelling, how to relate to their own lives. She became popular through her viral TEDx talk called How to Stop Screwing Yourself Over. And then she wrote a book called The 5-Second Rule, which is the one that really helped put her on the map. That was in 2017. She's written 5 books. The Let Them Theory is her 5th book. So let's get into the Let Them Theory. The Let Them Theory, very simply, do you want to guess what the Let Them Theory is?
I mean, I have an idea of what it is. Do you want me to share it, or do you just
What's your general? Give me a 20-second.
Basically, don't spend all your time focusing on what other people are doing or saying or anything. Like, if they're going to do something that's kind of shitty and not really your vibe, let them do it and let it like kind of roll off your back and move on with your day and focus on what you can control.
Very good. That is basically the Let Them Theory. So stop trying to control others. Right. Allow people to make their own choices, even if it is related to you. So whether they're ignoring your text messages or you're giving advice and they're dismissing your opinions, we can often take those things deeply personally. Mel Robbins is reminding us in this book, let them. That's their lives. That's the way that they are going to navigate their lives. On the flip side, she offers a second paradigm, which is let me. So instead of focusing on what other people are doing, let me is about self-focus. It emphasizes controlling your own reactions to people, creating better boundaries, focusing on your goals, and really coming from a place of self-respect. So she likes to give a lot of really real world, quote unquote, relatable. I'm just saying relatable because not everything's relatable to everyone based on your life experiences. But for Mel, she gives a lot of relatable guidance, like if all your friends are going to brunch and they don't invite you, don't obsess over why they didn't. I know, it's sad. Why they didn't invite you. Let them. Refocus on yourself. The principle is pretty simple but effective. A lot of people feel, obviously, it's a bestseller. She herself calls it a cheap trick that works. So it's really about keeping it short and tight and something that you can remember. So that's the general let them. Now, why is this? This doesn't sound like it should be hot or hype or controversial.
Right.
There's a little bit of criticism surrounding it. So I thought I would share that with you too, so you could make a full assessment and have all the information.
Fully educated.
Thank you. Yeah. So 3 main criticisms. And I'm going to add one that I've been really thinking about this summer. One is critics are really saying this is a repackaging of Stoicism. Really, it's about like taking a bigger spiritual concept and putting it in catchy terms and phrases to make it easier to understand. In terms of the writing, there's some criticism about it being, and I did read parts of it where, yes, it can be a little repetitive in writing or surface level in the examples that are given. It doesn't want to go into deep kind of grief or trauma or, you know, harder life moments that you have to navigate. It stays a little surface. And so it oversimplifies some of the real emotional work that goes into just living a life and trying to heal. And then the third one, which is the biggest challenge it has, is some allegations around plagiarism. There is a poem that was written by and narrated by a woman called Cassie B. Phillips in 2022 called Let Them.
Okay.
It uses very similar language. And when Robbins was asked about this, she denied knowing of the poet, of ever hearing about the poem, and sort of dismissed it. But critics, and I did go look it up, do point out that there are very, very, very many similarities between the poem and the way that Mel writes about this. Quickly, my last one is just that, you know, the reason I've been thinking about it so much this summer is because it's everywhere on social media. But also this summer for me was full, and for all of us, full of more and more awareness of the harm that's happening in the world, right. The harm that's happening here in the United States, the continued oppression and what we're now dealing with in terms of our rights and how we're looking at oppressed communities and all of that. And then, you know, you look in the world and there's famine and war and starvation and genocide. And so it felt to some, and this is what I was going back and forth on, a little tone deaf in the moment that it came out, that Let Them feels a little distanced from what's happening in the world and how involved we need to be. So Bean, that is the Let Them theory. That is the criticism. Hot or hype?
I'm going to give my background before I decide.
Please.
I'm going to give you a quick decision, and it actually speaks to something you said. Well, first of all, I actually really like this concept. I think that it's really important for people to understand that so much around them is not in their control, and you can only. I guide my children on this all the time. It doesn't matter what dude over there is wearing. Like, that doesn't affect you. It doesn't matter if this one said that you did something when you know you didn't do it. You're allowed to use your words. But you can let these people do what it is they're going to do and still be you and still be a good person. I agree. It does not apply to larger scale concepts like physical harm and abuse and things that are happening in this world. But I'm going to give it a hot thumbs up. Hot. That's hot for applying it to smaller everyday situations, like the things that really seem to weigh people down, that it's sort of like, why are you putting your energy towards such small bullshit. You know what I mean? It's more like a let that shit roll right off your back. No, I'm not talking about racism, and I'm not talking about these larger concepts. I'm saying for everyday usage, when somebody's rude to you in the grocery store, let them do what they're going to do. If they cut you off, okay, whatever. Do your thing.
So we're getting a hot with context.
Right. We're getting a hot. Right. I'm not going to let I'm not going to just let people be truly unkind to large groups of people. That doesn't feel like that doesn't feel like it doesn't involve me. I'm going to use the let them when it's not something that really
little stuff. Don't sweat the small stuff.
That's the let that. That's Mel, kind of how I.
Mel,
right?
Is this don't sweat the small stuff?
But that's a great concept. And why not repackage it? We all need a dose of that.
All right. I'm down. I get it.
Okay. Thank you. You?
I am just going to come out with my rating, which is hype. Ooh. I'm calling this hype for two reasons. The first is, look, I get it. I know the self-help industry. I guess I'm in it, although I'm trying to really change it to the self-trust.
Yeah,
industry.
You are.
You know, that's my purpose and my platform. I get it. We have to put things into cute little marketable packages so people can understand them. But for me, it is hype because we all have much more nuance and depth to us. And I would like to assume the intelligence of my reader rather than put things into easy to understand, tight, maybe shallow packages that are marketable. She is a marketing genius, which is why she does so well, and no hate on that. But it doesn't, for me, in terms of helping people, I'm going to let her. It doesn't go deep enough, and it feels too, you know, kitschy and marketing-y for what I think we all need, which is more nuanced approaches. I think we have to understand our own nuance. And then also hype because, again, I guess it was just the timing, and maybe this could have been done better through her interviews or context, but I wanted more around, we can't just let them right now. We really can't let them. We got to be using our voices and not let them.
Right.
So
there's
I'm going
nuance.
Hype.
All right, fine.
All right, I'm hype. I'm all good.
Hot and hype. This is why this podcast is so interesting and fresh. We don't agree all the time. To us.
When we listen to it, we're like, wow, a good episode.
Those two women really know what they're saying.
All right. Well, to that point, let's get to our main topic for today, which I think is going to be a little juicy and interesting, I hope, for our listeners. But it is for me. I think it's something that we all hear a lot. But we wanted to spend a minute and just say, what is this term collective consciousness practically? Yes. And what in the hell does it mean for my life?
Yes. Basically, when I pitched this topic idea to you, that's basically what I said.
That was your question.
I was like, what the hell is this? You were like,
Bean, answer it.
Yeah. Totally. I'm very looking forward to what you, I'm looking forward to you answering it.
Well, I think it sounds really big and abstract.
Yeah.
But what if I were to tell you it affects you every day? It affects how you feel in a crowd. It affects the trends that spread through social media. And it even affects what's possible for humanity and our future.
Oh.
So let's take it from abstract to practical so that we can apply it and think about it, all of us, more critically. Please. So for centuries and centuries, philosophers, mystics, spiritual teachers, they've talked about this invisible thread that connects us all. Some call it the collective conscious. Others call it the soul of humanity. What we really want to think about is, like, how does it show up in my day-to-day life today? So you can, like, start to tangibly connect to this concept of your collective conscious. So I'm going to give you some examples and you tell me if these things relate to you. Okay?
Please.
Have you ever been in a concert and the crowd's energy just hypes you for the concert, or it gives you goosebumps? Not so much the band, but the energy coming off the crowd.
Yes, I actually think a lot of concerts are, their quality is determined by the quality of the crowd and the energy in the crowd.
Right. So that's a really good example. There's something else going on that's nonverbal. Yeah, there's more than meets the eye that's happening in this collective of people.
Right.
Scientists also talk about the fact that yawns are contagious. Right? Like, if you see me yawning, you might yawn.
Yeah, I thought there was something to that, though. It's collective consciousness.
It is this sort of telepathic, we're going to use this word a lot, connection we have to one another that sets us off when that happens. The other thing that really shows the collective conscious is, like, the concept of virality. Why do some things go viral and other things don't?
Don't ask me.
The idea in collective consciousness is, like, we sort of all collectively decide simultaneously that this thing is cool or interesting or funny or whatever it might be. I mean, I don't know if you agree, but, like, I watch things on social. I'm like, why did this go viral and this other thing that was better or smarter or funnier didn't?
I know. Right? I thought, like, it was the algorithm, not the collective consciousness.
But the algorithm is tapping into what we as consumers of the content are reacting to.
Right.
So this idea is, like, we all sort of flow in this wave towards things. Like, this is something that we all agree on collectively without talking about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even those who have, like, completely different mentalities from that of my own, we are all flowing in this collective energy consciousness.
We're all connected through this collective consciousness.
Connected to some people. To some people's consciousness.
Well, let me ask you this. This is another example of collective consciousness. Fine. And then we'll just talk about, like, what the hell it is. Have you ever thought of someone and then they text you in that exact moment?
Yeah, you all the time. Me, you, only people I'm really close with.
So what do you make of that?
I never know. I always think sometimes, like, but I use this a lot too. Like, it's that, like, we're living in multiple dimensions at one time. And, like, that text had already just happened and somehow this dimension, time dimension of me got a ping of that or something. I don't know. I'm very spidey sense tuned in to, like, I'd say 3-4 to 5 people I can think of. That's it, though.
I do feel that when we love someone, it even heightens our connection to them telepathically.
It's only close people.
And by the way, this summer, another thing Bean and I did was really get into the telepathy tapes.
If you
have not listened to the telepathy tapes, we need you to immediately stop listening to this podcast.
No, now.
Finish this episode. But put it on your list. The telepathy tapes is so beautifully done and very much done for the skeptic. Very much done to prove to the skeptic that there is more than meets the eye. And there is a lot about the collective consciousness.
Yes.
As people talk about telepathy. How can we hear each other's thoughts and feel each other when we're not in front of each other?
Yes. I didn't even think of the connection, but totally.
Yeah. All right. So plain language, what is the collective conscious? In, you know, general, it is this idea that there's a pool of beliefs, ideas, emotions, and awareness that just exists amongst all of humanity. So this species of ours has a pool of beliefs and thoughts and ideas that are invisible to us that we tap into. It's also obviously deeply rooted in philosophy and in spirituality.
Right.
In Buddhism, it's called the concept of an interbeing that we exist because of and within one another. So there is each of us individually, but we are one fractal of a larger being.
Right.
Source. And so if we are one fractal of a larger being, then we are able to sense the rest of the being. Think about the tentacle of an octopus, right? Like one tentacle being out there having its own experience, but it being connected to the rest of the body, the rest of the tentacles.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's good.
Oh, thank you. Other like practical analogies that like people like to talk about right now is think of it like Wi-Fi. We're all connected to the same network, sometimes consciously and sometimes without even knowing it. Or like an ocean. Each of us is a wave, but we're made of the same water. So if we're made of the same material, then we are tapped into each other. We're tapped into that source energy. And then the last term I love for this is Plato, ancient philosopher, described it as the world soul, which suggests in itself that the cosmos itself is alive, that everything in the cosmos, even those things as we think of as inanimate, has an energy that is communicating with the rest of its environment, and that that is like a living, pulsing being, the cosmos itself, and that we can unconsciously tap into that energy.
All of us. So he's saying that Earth has its own consciousness and the galaxies have their own consciousness that we're all pulling from. It's kind of
exactly
like the cloud. Another way to make it techie, like it's a cloud of information, you know, how you upload your photos. I don't know how to explain tech stuff.
Tell us how the cloud works.
But we're all like uploading our information and downloading from the cloud of consciousness.
Good way to put it. Exactly that. And actually, science is circling back to some of these ideas today and trying to prove them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really fascinating, actually. I'll just talk about one study that's happened over time. But basically, scientists are starting to understand that in our brains, mirror neurons fire when we see someone else act or emote. So when someone else is emoting, there's a mirror neuron in our brain firing the similar feeling.
Even if we don't agree with that sensation or feeling or emotion?
But we can feel it.
Wow.
I mean, like we talked about empaths repeatedly last season.
Yeah.
This is a scientific way of looking at it, that the brain has neurons that fire if I walk in a room and there's a sensation coming from you that mirrors your feeling. And so it's basically trying to prove that we're biologically set up for this shared consciousness. Because why would my brain fire this neuron in my body if, from a biology standpoint, we aren't meant to be communicating at this higher consciousness level with one another.
Right. But what about, again, can I go right back to if it's someone whose thoughts or emotions I don't even agree with, we're still sharing the same ones or we're pulling from the same pool?
For me, what I'm hearing you say is that tapping into the consciousness means you agree with everyone. And those are two different concepts.
Okay.
This is more about us being able to be connected on a thought level with one another and an emotional level with one another doesn't necessarily mean that then when we bring it down to the level of values and the way we live our lives, that we're going to agree.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So the science that I promised is this project called the Global Consciousness Project. And what they've done is that they've put random number generators all over the world in different places, okay? With this idea that the collective conscious during big moments of tragedy will have so much power that the random number generators won't be so random, but that they'll generate numbers that are similar to one another because our collective energy has an impact on these random number generators.
Because
think about it, at the very core of a random number generator, we are accepting that it is unaffected by anything else, right? Like it's just spitting out a bunch of numbers.
Correct.
What they set out to prove is, well, wait a minute, can it be affected when multiple millions of people are experiencing something? So they did this, and then 9/11 happened. And during the terrorist attacks, the network of random number generators showed statistically significant deviations from randomness and from scientists, quote unquote, as if the machines were cohering along with the global emotional field.
Wow.
So all that means is that it was random, 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 and then it all became more uniform to the point where it was statistically significantly different than how random it was during this collective moment of
trauma. I wonder how long it lasted.
That's a good question, but I did read that the anomalies in the randomness started even before the first plane struck, which some people interpret as evidence of anticipatory collective consciousness. This sense of intuitive knowing collectively that something's happening.
Mind-blowing emoji right there.
Another one that the RNG, the random number generators, were affected by was Princess Diana's death. It was another example of where they saw it shift from being random to statistically significantly more uniform.
Wow. I wonder what it's like now in the state of the world.
Right? We should check in with these random, with these our RNGs. Global consciousness project friends. I would love to have them here and interview them, Bean.
I'll reach out.
Right?
Write that down. Yeah, I'll reach out.
Write that down.
I'll reach out to anybody and everybody.
So I don't know. I feel like the science of that blows me away. It's like, how can you, and listen, there can be criticism about anything, but I actually really love that science is catching up to this concept and 100%. Trying to prove it out, right?
And then does, we're probably going to get into this as we go further, but I'm curious, does my thought process then impact the global consciousness, or does the global consciousness impact my thought process?
Both.
Only. Oh, it's both. All the ways.
It's this sort of like give and take.
Oh, no.
You know, the choices that
stay out of it.
The choices that we make affect the outcomes, and the thoughts and the beliefs we have. And the thoughts and beliefs we have shift. Oh, okay. Here's a really good historic example that just came to me.
Great. From the collective consciousness.
Yes. Think about the abolishment of slavery.
Yes. Always do.
Think about how long in this country that was accepted as quote unquote the norm.
Right.
And then suddenly beliefs changed to such a critical mass that that entire system, economic system, was upended.
Right.
So that's a good example in history of when belief changes on such a collective level and it sort of is contagious and it spreads, that the collective conscious has shifted from accepting one thing as normal to seeing the abhorrent harm in it.
That feels a little hopeful for life right now, actually.
Oh, good. I'm so glad I can do that to you.
Thank you.
All right. So maybe we should talk about why the hell this is relevant to our listeners, to me, to you.
Please. Please
to
do.
To anyone who's listening on their morning commute. Does that even happen anymore?
I don't know. It sounded like it does. Like a 90s radio guy.
I think it does. I used to commute when I didn't start working for myself and sit in this she shed of mine all day. Anyway, the biggest thing to think about is if there is a collective consciousness, how do I contribute to it?
Yes.
And one of the most tactical or tangible ways is mood and the contagiousness of your mood. So, there's also scientific evidence that moods spread in groups online, right?
Oh, of course.
So, what are you contributing to the collective conscious when you go into work and you're in a shitty mood? What happens to the energy of those around you, working with you in the meetings? How are you affecting that collective consciousness with the mood that you go in with? Versus if you go in a really calm, balanced, or joyful mood, what is the effect you have on the group around you?
Is that collective consciousness, or is that just like workplace morale?
But if your mood is affecting other people's mood, workplace morale is the outcome. Yeah. So like, let's say that there's a really toxic person. You know, this happens all the time when people call me from companies and say, come help us. Right. Usually there's a leader that has toxic behavior. That toxic behavior spreads like wildfire.
100%.
Right? And so there is this way that like as a collective, that team, that company, their morale is affected by that toxicity from a collective consciousness level because they can feel it beyond just experiencing it on the day-to-day. Right. The other really interesting one is prayer circles or group meditations. Have you ever walked into a space where a lot of prayer happens and felt something?
Meditation, though, like meditating individually versus meditating in a group, there is a true power to be felt in a room of people who are meditating versus when you do it by yourself in your own room. Like you can tap into the collective power that is happening. And it allows me personally to meditate on a deeper level than when I'm alone.
That's a good example of how it can affect you personally, is that when you want to achieve that level of depth in your own mindfulness, knowing that there are spaces where if others are in that level of mindfulness, it's going to be contagious. You now know that. So put yourself in those spaces. But like, you know, if you walk into anything, I remember walking into, Notre Dame the first time and being, and I'm not Catholic, but walking in and being like, whoa, like you just feel something in there. And that is the power of all of the collective prayer and hope that has been poured into that place that you can tap into. That's existing in this cloud. They've uploaded their prayer into the cloud and you're sensing it.
I have a quick callback to an old, very old episode where we had Stacey Peliche on, and she had referenced a near-death experience, and she had was floating above her body. And she said that she realized she felt like she was like being pulled up or like floating or something. And she said she realized it was like prayers keeping her afloat. Wow. It was like something like a good tangible. I just remember her always saying there was like a tangible sensation of people she cared about praying for her. And I'm not a big prayer kind of person. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it was like a vibes, like their good vibes were holding her up and keeping her moving.
Yeah. I grew up a big prayer person. My grandmother and my mom always were like, before you go to bed, just pray. And I did notice the last few years I had forgotten to do it.
Yeah.
And I started doing it again. I wake up happier.
Aww.
Yeah. It makes a difference.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Can I do a vibe check before bed? Not a prayer. Can I do like a,
what's a vibe? Tell me what that would be.
I don't know. The word prayer is off putting to me, honestly.
Oh, that's fine. Sorry. Yeah. I get that. That's totally. Yeah. 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 I use it as like a connection to source to just express gratitude for the day. Like, thank you for this, for that, for that, for the kids' health, for, you know, it's basically just grounding me back in what I'm really, really grateful for and that I'm present in my life.
And it's a good to the collective consciousness, one might say.
Maybe. I think it adds to the collective consciousness.
Oh, I love that.
When I'm praying. All right. So I'm going to tell you that the reason I am excited about this is because this is what makes me believe in the future of humanity.
And boy, oh boy, do we need it, buddy.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, what kind of hope might this give you?
Honestly, when you referenced the slavery concept and how collectively people came together, and there were obviously a ton of people who believed slavery was the way to be and the way to go, but that the good overpowered the bad. And in today's society, it feels like I'm drowning in the bad so much that there's no way we can flip it, but you're right. There are, everybody I care about and love is in alignment with me. And if we collectively can come together and keep harnessing this power of the collective consciousness, maybe we can like shift it.
Yeah. My spiritual, That's what I asked you, is does it give you hope? Like, my spiritual knowing tells me that we as humanity are evolving towards a more unified soul awareness, a more unified remembering of, oh, we all come from the same ocean. We all are made of the same substance. And I'm telling you, when you listen to the telepathy tapes, and you know, I've been really down this rabbit hole. I've been reading Dolores Cannon, who I also recommend. It's there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about it. It's out there, but there's things that you're like, oh, she's a hypnotist who has hypnotized tons of people and have talked about their past lives. But I really feel a move towards more and more people awakening to our intuitive knowing and awakening to our powers around connecting with one another telepathically and feeling and sensing one another. And I think the more we wake up to that sensing and being in connection with one another non-verbally, the harder it's going to be to hate and fear and harm one another.
Oh, from your mouth to source's ears, you know what I mean? Can I ask you a quick aside? It's a quick question.
Please.
When you encourage people and take them to understand their higher selves and meet their higher selves, and that your book explains that your higher self has a knowing that you don't even realize you have. Is that knowing the collective you're pulling from the cloud, the collective consciousness, or is it a separate knowing?
No, it's all intertwined. Your higher self is the aspect of you that's totally plugged into the collective consciousness.
That's what I was asking.
Versus your human self not being sure if it's real or true or you believe it. Whereas your higher self is there. It's just in the cloud with everyone else's higher self.
Floating around.
And that is why your higher self is always going to guide you to a loving answer. Because it understands that it's one with everyone else.
Oh, how beautiful.
So beautiful. Well,
anyway, quite informative, I will say. Bravo.
Thank you. I hope everyone feels like, you know what, I want my takeaway for our listeners to be, what role do I have in this collective consciousness? How do I want to shift it? And right now, you know, is our collective fear more powerful or our collective hope? I really hope that our collective hope becomes the most powerful entity out there.
But I can't deny that that collective fear is palpable, and it's out there too. I'm scared.
All right, Bean. Well, before we go, it's time for listener questions. And a reminder for you all, please email us. We'll share the email link in our show notes. Bean mentioned it up top. But email us at that email address and share your questions. And we will promise to get to them in an upcoming episode. All right. So for today's listener question, Bean, question is, I know I'm not happy in my job. That much is obvious. But fear stops me from looking for a new one. How do I push through that? Very relatable.
Very relatable question. I hate my job as well, and I'm very scared to tell my boss that I got to get out of here.
You know what? Screw you, girl. You're out.
Okay. What I think about this situation is, which is heavier? Is the fear of staying in your job and living your life every single day, waking up and going to the same goddamn place with the same people you can't stand, doing some soul-wrecking work? Is the fear of doing that every single day for the rest of your life greater or less than the fear of just seeing what's out there? It doesn't have to be. You don't have to quit your job today. I think you just need to take a deep breath, see what your options are. And if that feels scarier, truly, than leaving the hellhole that you're in, then maybe the hellhole is the choice for you. But if not, dive into the fear on the other end. Dive in.
Really good, Bean. Yes. I love that. Yes. I think the only thing I will add is it's time to make a choice if fear is going to continue to guide your decisions. And I will just say to you, take a minute, think back to all the times you chose things out of fear. And what happened? What was the evidence? What was the outcome of not doing the thing because you were afraid, or not speaking up because you were afraid? And then take a deep breath, shake that off. Think about a time that you followed your courage, that you followed your inner knowing, and you made a decision from that place. What happened then? I know that it requires a great deal of trust and faith, which I think is one of the greatest challenges of our lifetime. Mm-hmm. But it is also the greatest test, because when we show that we have faith in ourselves, guess who shows up and proves us right? Ourself. The version of you that believes that you deserve the very best, that believes in your skills, that believes in your ability to make an income and even more than what you need, while still being happy and feeling purposeful. If you believe that that's not possible, you're in a scarcity mindset, and that's okay. We're not going to judge or shame you for that, and you shouldn't do that to yourself. But maybe it's time to choose a more abundant mindset and have faith in the version of you that believes in you instead of listening to the contracted one.
Were you just talking to me there? It's time was to it the listener job, or was it me? Message we hope- received.
Thank you for that question. And again, yes. Please make sure you reach out to us. Bean, it's so good to be back.
A true delight, not a cringe. True delight.
Oh, bringing it back to last season. Guys, thank you for spending the last 40 minutes with us. And if you enjoyed this episode, we would so love and appreciate for you to share it. But also, leave us a review anywhere that you're listening. And remember that we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Signal Bean. See you then. Bye.
See you then. Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.